SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour two on this Tuesday, and a fun visit with John Toscano and our friend Jerry on Twitter. I just saw, I got done and I looked up and just catching up on a couple of things, and Jerry suggested I bring up a pick six hit, because John's not afraid to bet. So I'll have to save that. We'll save that. The pick six story with John Toscano for next time, and there's going to be a next time because Forgotten Hero, she's looks like a serious filly. Happy to start our book show, our book segment. We do this every year, sometimes actually a week earlier, but there's still time, and the online book sellers will still get you your book selections in time for Christmas, even though it's starting to get, it's getting serious 7 days away. But a book for a horse lover, we just know from experience from all the different authors that have visited over the years, you guys all love horse books and horse stories and stories about the human connections as well. And Christina Bassanakis had really, I'm sure, a remarkable experience in working with Dwayne Lucas on his collection, the story of Dwayne and Sermon on the Mount, which is very clever. All the times we've seen Wayne, leaning on the saddle and pontificating and literally offering a sermon while mounted. And Christina Bassanakis joins us. Been way too long. Christina, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Steve. And it seems like it has been a while since I've been on with you, but I've always enjoyed it tremendously.
Well, and I really should slip in a Bon Noel, actually. That's more
exactly.
Appropriate.
Exactly.
And you could also, if you want to throw in your third language, you want to throw in the Greek greeting, you can do that too.
Kala Christoulina.
There we go.
Our Greek friends, and we know our Greek friends, our Greek peeps like to bet too, so I'm sure there's some of them on there.
Well, she's a triple threat, Greek and French and English. And are you hiding any other languages?
Some of them are peripheral, but we'll keep those in the bag for now. Some of them, they're passing.
Well, you grow up in Montreal, and you have that opportunity. A little Italian, a little Yiddish and Hebrew. I mean, there's virtually no major language that you can't employ. Portuguese. I mean, it's all there for you in Montreal. Well, Christina, this had to have been an amazing experience, and talk about how it all came about.
Well, and I'm not sure if for everybody who knows, maybe some people who don't, I have a background in horse racing. I've been, I was at Gulfstream. I know I was on your show with that when I was doing the commentary there. I've done, I worked at the TDN as a writer. So I've done a lot of things. And I think a lot of people actually don't realize that I started out as a writer, as a journalist, as a turf writer. So that's really where the basis came in. And I was a fan of Wayne Lucas since I was a teenager. And I was a really hardcore fan. I followed him in the 80s. I knew exactly what he was doing, what was happening, where he was going. So when I got into horse racing in terms of a profession, I really started to pursue him in terms of trying to get some kind of book done. And we're talking, this is about maybe 15, 16 years ago, that I just really started to harass him, really. And he was always like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And then, you know, it kind of evolved over time, but it was always fundamentally a no. And I think just in recent years, maybe in terms of just my persistence and keeping on him all this time, his wife, his lovely wife, Lori Lucas, she had a huge hand to play in this as well. She smoothed it over too, and she actually helped in collecting a lot of his quotes. And it took months to collect, you know, a lot of his favorite quotes and things he's fond of saying. So in collaboration, finally, he gave us the green light. We worked out a format. The format evolved. It started off just as a quote book. The pictures, of course, everybody loves pictures. I really wanted to get those in. And then as time went on, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't add some of the stories, you know, some of Wayne's highlights, lowlights in his life. It's been an evolution. So that's why I term it more an anthology, because it's a collection not only of works, but it's a collection, and also different people are quoted in there. Bob Baffert, Todd Pletcher, Mark Hennig, Kieran McLaughlin, a lot of his former assistants. It's really been a collective effort here, and we are so proud with how it came out, Steve. It really is a beautiful book, and we just think that it's a wonderful gift.
And you touch on just even by virtue of mentioning, you know, some of the people you went to talk about him and to include in you know, in the story of him from a. I would almost call it a personnel manager sense. I mean, when you talk about that, you know, that famous, you know, murderer's row of trainers to be that, you know, went to the, you know, the University of D. Wayne. And that part is almost almost equal, I would think, to the incredible success on the racetrack. I mean, the legacy is going to be shared, you know, forever. What Wayne accomplished, you know, in terms of modern training feats, and then, you know, folded into, you know, how he, you know, changed the game from a number of different professional aspects, and, you know, the wake of, you know, outstanding talent that he helped shape into careers like Todd's and Mark's and Dallas and the rest.
You know, I'm glad you say that, or you mentioned that. I always find it funny because I'm out in the mornings at the training centers, and I often see, you know, I've had a chance to see, you know, Todd Pletcher's training list. I see, or the set list. I see Kieran McLaughlin's, and they kind of look like Wayne's. So it's one of those things, like, it's almost like sometimes even some of these little things that have kind of carried over from one regime to another. Now, in all fairness, these people, you know, Dallas included, Mark, like we said, Randy Bradshaw, all these guys, they really have, they took a lot of their own, and they kind of interwove it into what maybe a lot of the things or the philosophies that Wayne Lucas had. But I think we'd be remiss if we don't mention Jeff Lucas. And yeah. Jeff Lucas is a huge element in this book, and for a variety of reasons. If you go to Todd Pletcher, Todd spent a lot of time with Jeff Lucas. And so as important as Wayne is to the book, of course, and his record is legendary, Jeff Lucas was a huge element into why Wayne also was able to do what he did in terms of being in California, having a string in New York, and operating at the level that he did, because he was a master horseman. And I think, tragically, although his story was not able to continue into maybe him going out on his own, and he probably is the best trainer that wasn't in or will never be in the Hall of Fame, sadly, but that's why we tried to pay homage to him also in this book, because it's as much a celebration of Jeff Lucas as it is Wayne Lucas.
Well, and any, you know, anybody that has been close to the story or you know, was aware at the time and even subsequently after Jeff's passing, and starting with Wayne, everyone says that he would have surpassed even his father's accomplishments, and that he was just so brilliant a horseman in his own right. And every single person that when this subject comes up, they all say it, including Wayne.
Mm-hmm. And Wayne is actually probably one of the first people who would tell you that. A few years ago, the impression I was left with, I went to interview Wayne. I did a story, a feature in the TDN. And I did this big three-part series in the TDN. It was about maybe 5-6 years ago. And I went up to Saratoga. I sat with him for an hour and a half. I was amazed. And later I wasn't amazed. But it was interesting. Every story, every second story started with, well, Jeff and I were speaking, and Jeff said, and we went with Jeff, and Jeff was in almost every single story. And I remember thinking to myself, because I'm not asking that specifically, but that's what was coming back to me, and I made a mental note of it. So when we went forward with the book, I instantly knew this has to be an important element, because it really played into where Wayne was and what Wayne did. And I'll be honest, like, there's some quotes, or some of Wayne's quotes in the book that made me emotional. If you read them, you can tell in terms of his feelings of not only about Jeff, but how things turned out, and, you know, maybe, you know, during the time, you know, you see things differently, and now maybe, you know, how many years, 20, 25 years later, you see things another way, and just that reflective view that Wayne has. But the one thing I will say about Wayne is he's very positive. He never, you can't really get him into a zone where he's poor me. Or he's so positive. He's always moving forward. He's just such an upbeat guy that I think the fact that you lose a son, and you lose a son so tragically the way he did, the fact that he was able to soldier on, a lot of people, that might have broken people. And he really, just to me, is a superstar in so many ways. Besides being a trainer, as a man, I think the way he handles things is just top-notch.
In doing this and in going through this exercise with as much material as is out there in terms of the, you know, the media of the moment that recorded the, you know, the victories and the losses, what surprised you in the course of putting the book together?
I think, first of all, the work, the amount of work that it took, and for me, the degree of, because I knew, like I said, thank God, I actually followed him so closely in the 80s and the 90s, of course, and so I knew his history really well. Matching up the quotes with the pictures and the stories, that was difficult, I have to say, like trying to get all the content where it was tight and it flowed. But I think certain things back in the day, we all knew he was a basketball coach. I don't know if I remembered, I may have seen it at one point, but Wayne Lucas actually created an athletic basketball shoe, which he sold to Converse for $10,000, and he ended up, of course, buying horses. This was early on in his career. This is when he was still coaching basketball. And to me, that was like, it was a weighted athletic shoe that he did for his master's thesis, and he actually sold it. And to me, that was surprising, because I was like, wow, you know, this guy really could have done anything he wanted. He could have been a college basketball coach right now if he had wanted to go that route. So that was a bit surprising. And also just seeing some of the pictures from back in the day, Dallas Stewart, we added a book in there about Dallas. We added a page in there about Dallas Stewart, and he's on Winning Colors. I had totally, I don't even think I knew that Dallas was getting on Winning Colors regularly in the morning. So that was another thing that was a bit surprising. So we stumbled upon a lot of things that I thought were interesting and that people might find interesting as well.
You talk about the basketball days and his, you know, the nickname Coach, that it goes right to that. And that part is interesting, because you absolutely have the, you know, the salient point that no matter what he would have chosen to do, he strikes you as the kind of person that would have been an elite success in whatever capacity he chose.
Yeah, and that is also reflected in the people he surrounds himself by, too. Like, if you see some of his really good friends, Wayne is obviously very well-known, very well-connected. However, you know, for instance, our forward was done by Bill Parcells. Of course, football legend Bill Parcells, who, by the way, I had a chance to speak to him as well in working for the book, who's a remarkable man, And you see why Wayne could have been a coach, because Bill Parcells actually, and Wayne, Bill even said this, they're very similar kind of guys. You know, they have a similar, way of thinking, a similar way of moving through life. And again, obviously there are differences between them. However, they are the same kind of guys. And I think that's why Wayne could have been a coach. He could have been anything, really. I think he could have been president of the United States after dealing with him, because he's just that kind of person where he's so hardworking. That's like a huge theme in this book, Steve. Hard work. Hard work is like number one for Wayne. And really, on the racetrack in many cases, you know, it has to be. But I think Wayne puts in so many positive themes, and really it transcends horse racing. It could have been basketball, it could have been football, it could have been anything. It could have been even on Wall Street. His dedication, his drive, his work ethic, and his whole attitude could have made him successful no matter what he did.
How about regrets? Any? Did you sense any, or did you even get into some of the things that he might, in retrospect, wanted to have done differently?
Wayne is not a regret guy. So he's not the kind of guy where, so I asked him, actually, we talked about that for a couple of different instances, but most notably for the basketball, in terms of making the transition and going into horse racing rather than basketball. And he basically said, you know, I'm not one to look back. And he really doesn't. He just takes what, you know, he just moves forward. That's it. He decides what he wants to do. He focuses on it like a laser, you know, he puts the laser down and he just moves forward. I think with Jeff, you know, and that's what I was alluding to earlier. With Jeff, there was a bit of an inkling where he's like, you know, maybe I might have leaned on him too hard, or I might have done, you know, maybe. But I think, looking back, the reason why they were that successful and they achieved what they did was because they were so intense. Because, you know, Wayne made a comment that they would get up in the morning, like they always left in daylight, in darkness. So, you know, they'd leave 3 o'clock or whatever time it is in the morning, it's dark. They get back home, it's dark. Like they would never have an opportunity to really have much of a social life outside of that. And their relationships might have suffered because of it. So again, he doesn't drag that on, but you could see now in retrospect, as a man who has lived this life, he looks back on it and says, you know, maybe the price I paid for, you know, this was a consequence to that. But again, to achieve the level of success that Wayne Lucas has, it needs that kind of intensity and focus. And that's another thing I got from Bill Parcells too. They're the same kind, they have very same philosophy on that. Like their work, their dedication, maybe other things suffered because of it.
What do you sense he's most proud of?
His son, his grandchildren. When he speaks about his grandchildren, we have actually a couple pictures of them. They're just wonderful, wonderful people. Brady and Kelly, just wonderful people, and their successes in their own right. And I had an opportunity to spend some time with them Breeders' Cup week, and just like really, really good people. And he's very proud of them. And I think Wayne is one of those guys that, all the things that he did, and I don't think that it's that he's not proud of it, but those accomplishments, of course, are important. But I think his focus is really his people, like his community, whether it's his family, his wife. He just has a tremendous partner in Lori, and seeing them together has just been. I really have had a wonderful opportunity to spend time with both of them and a lot of time with them, And I think his respect for her is just over the moon. But again, some people may be surprised that Wayne's biggest assets or his biggest, the thing that he really focuses in on is his, are his people, his family, his friends, his colleagues, the loyalty to, you mentioned the assistants earlier. You know, when I was at Saratoga sitting in his barn, and you'd have a whole slew, you know, Randy Bradshaw's coming in, like people are just stopping by, you know, and people routinely come by to see him, you know, people who he had been associated with. So I think the people around him are his biggest accomplishment for me. And again, this is a man who accomplished a lot in horse racing with horses.
no doubt. And still is accomplishing. I mean, is he surprised or does he expect to retire? I mean, is he surprised that he is, you know, he had clearly a not a second win, but absolutely a influx of clients that came, you know, in his 70s, and it's very notable. I mean, he's had a big horse on a regular basis again, you know, the last several years.
I don't know that I would say surprised, because there's nothing about Wayne that speaks surprise, right? It's all based in hard work. So you get what, you know, you reap what you sow. This is like that's his way, that's his philosophy, that's his way of being. So I don't think that it would be surprised, and I think in terms of his success and where he is, I think he's mellowed in at this place or in this stage in his life. I think he's mellowed. Is he going to retire? No, I'd be shocked if that would ever happen. I don't think that's on the horizon. And I really think that Wayne will continue to do what he's always done and just move forward just from a positive standpoint. But I think, you know, the gift of Wayne is, and this is what we really tried to put across with the book, is it's not really just, the book's not about horse racing only. Of course, we've got the pictures of Serena Song and Winning Colors and, you know, and all of the Saratoga Six and, you know, Grindstone and all of these horses. But it's really, it's about a man's life and a really remarkable life that he's had. He's met presidents. He's traveled all over the place. The horses have taken him everywhere. He's accomplished things that people at the time never even imagined possible. But he also is a man. He went through struggles. He had the highest of highs. He had really some epic lows. And it's the way he also just moved through his life. So it really is, I always say this is like made for movie. This is like a movie story. And people laugh, you know. Wayne laughs. I said, Wayne, this is going to be a movie one day, your life, because it really is. It really is some of the things that he's accomplished.
Yeah, and, you know, you think about, you mentioned a bit of a lull going back to the beginning of the decade. There was about a 3-year period where, you know, he did not have a graded stake winner. And then refer to a resurgence of sorts, and you know, here came, you know, horses like Optimizer and We'll Take Charge. The Oxbow, you know, one of the late chapters of the Lucas story, with Gary Stevens returning to the saddle, and them combining to win that 2013 Preakness. That's going to be a moment, I think, that is going to mellow beautifully as.
Yeah.
You know, particularly as part of the coda to Stevens' career, because of course Wayne's is still going. But the fact that they reunited to win another classic is really amazing.
You know, just to sum up that point and to your point, Wayne had donated his trophy collection to the
Museum.
Kentucky Derby Museum, and they've created a new wing. We went, we saw it, they unveiled it, beautiful. It was beautifully done. They put a lot of love and care into it, just like we did with the book, they did with the museum and the exhibit. And if you see what's in there, you'll be like, I actually saw it when it was still in his house. Steve, it blew my mind. The number, and he at the time had told me that was even all of it. Like, there was some of it still in the garage because he didn't have space. Like, his whole house was like a museum. And the big trophy room, which not necessarily by size but by stature, was all the main trophies. And I walked in and I got teary-eyed because I was like, one person. Now, of course, he was assisted by a whole lot of owners and a whole lot of connections, you know, associated with that. But it was mind-boggling. He donated it to the museum, and his thought was, it's like, wow, Wayne, didn't it bother you to, like, to just part with all of that? And he's like, no, I'm just, it's empty now, but I'm just going to, now I just have to get more. That's his view. This is his view on life. Okay, we moved that along. Now we're going to get more. So that really is at the basis of Wayne Lucas, which is always looking ahead.
Well, the trophy collection actually came up last Monday when I was doing the weekend recap at Santa Anita, and Bob Baffert talked about it, and he saw it too, and he said he was just astounded. It just he said I thought I had a nice group of trophies. He said you can't believe it. And they basically, you know, the museum expanded, and I knew that they had done an expansion, and I didn't realize how central to the expansion the Lucas room, the Lucas trophies are to the expansion. But it's on the second floor, I understand, and that brings us actually to a perfect juncture, Christina, because the book is available through the museum.
It is one of the primary places. We do have several venues actually that we've been selling it through. We've got a couple places actually. Keeneland, the Keeneland shop has some has copies as well. We're also Joseph Beth in Lexington. They're selling some as well. We've got a couple places in Saratoga Springs. Also, the museum, Hall of Fame Racing is going to be carrying it into the new year. But the museum, yeah, they've been really great with us. They've been selling it. It's Derby Museum. It's a derbymuseumstore.com. And to your point, when we were coming into this, you had said how we're getting close to Christmas. It actually, the promotion started yesterday that they have signed copies at the museum. So if you go on and you order one today, you will actually get a signed Sermon on the Mount signed by D. Wayne Lucas sent to you. So that's another incentive to get everybody to maybe buy one this week.
Well, I actually put the link up on Twitter, and what you do is add the code Lucas. And please, it's with a K. Please, for those of you that it just can't seem to get this, L-U-K-A-S. nothing rankles racetrack people more than L-U-C, Lucas spelled with a C. But if you put Lucas in the comment section of your order, and I got the link right on my Twitter, and I'm sure Christina will retweet it as well, but derbymuseumstore.com, and it's $40. I mean, it's a wonderful gift, so get one for yourself and one for, you know, the racing fan on your list. Christina, beyond this, and you're always doing something fun and new and interesting, what's on the horizon for you for the new year?
Well, I've been working with, this winter I'm working with XBTV. I've been working for them, and also TDN. That's where I started. I worked for them for many years, since 2001, actually, was when I first started there, and I was there about 14 years or so. And now I've gone back, and I've been doing more and more for them. We're shooting video and doing that kind of thing. So between those two things, I'm keeping pretty busy. So I'm always in some type of media, you know, involved in some kind of media or hospitality outlet in horse racing. But right now, I think that's where we're the direction we're going. I'm still doing some, you know, more for internet-based video and that kind of thing. But like I said, with TDN, it's interesting because we're doing more and more. They've started to do more video, and they do more video clips that they've been putting up, as has, you know, XBTV. They're also doing that. They're changing a little bit in terms of with their online, you know, video clips. So both of those are things that people should check or try and check out. They're very interesting. A lot of good interviews, you know, with trainers just up here at Palm Meadows, Palm Beach Downs, that we've done a few interviews already, just with the local trainers and just giving people a little bit of an update in terms of what they're doing and what they're looking forward to in the new year and that kind of thing. So definitely something to check out.
Well, Christine, wonderful to connect, and congratulations on Sermon on the Mount, Dwayne Lucas's life and his story, and it's a absolute must addition to any racing library. Derby, we're pushing the Derby Museum as a great place to order it from and get a Dwayne autographed version, and then bring it and have Christina sign it when you see her at maybe at Gulfstream or Palm Meadows or
my
wherever.
My pleasure.
Well, and a pleasure for me and all the listeners. Christina, Merry Christmas, a happy, healthy 2019, and look forward to seeing you at some point during the winter.
Yes, I'm sure I will see you, and Merry Christmas. Thank you very much. I always love being on your show.
It's our pleasure, and you can also visit, you've got the website too, right? Seaboss Racing, right?
Seaboss Racing, that's my, seabossracing.com, that's my website, but we also have the book website, because we've actually had orders, we've had bulk orders for people in universities and that kind of thing, so that's dwaynelucasbook.com. That's, you can get an overview of the book and just get a little more information and see what the book's all about.
Excellent. Christina, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Christina Bassanakis, everybody, and it's always wonderful to see her and wonderful to be able to share her thoughts and her experience working on Sermon on the Mount, Dwayne Lucas. We'll get to some more books a little bit later in the last half hour, including back to Taking Shergar, Milt Tobey's book, and Out of the Clouds, which we didn't really, I mentioned, and it came up with Steve Haskin, but we'll make sure you know about Out of the Clouds as well, which Stymie's story, just terrific. Well worth seeking out. And authors Linda Carroll and David Rosner, they did the Affirmed Aladar rivalry story about 5 years ago, maybe? And Linda was on with us then. Out of the Clouds. The Unlikely Horseman and the Unwanted Colt Who Conquered the Sport of Kings. The Sport of Kings thing I've gotten very tired of, but the story itself, a winner, Hirsch Jacobs, of course, who we're still trying to get a stake back in his honor. Back after this, Steve Asmussen is going to join us off the very strong Remington season that ended Sunday night. Pair of wins and quite a bit of the other topics too to close out 2018 with Steve Asmussen. Started with Gunrunner and heading into the new year with some good two-year-olds and some good older horses. Steve Asmussen next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of HIAS.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and catch the summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From Coney Island to the Sunset Strip, somebody's gonna make a happy trip tonight while the moon is bright. He's gonna have a bag of crazy toys to give the cornies of the girls and boys. So day Santa comes on big. Come a-calling when the snow's the most, when all your cats are sleeping warm as toast, and you gonna flip with old Saint Nick and raise a lick on a peppermint stick.
We're back at the races. Satchmo, Cool Yule, and our Christmas cuts continue. Year-end conversation, perfect timing to check in with Steve Asmussen on the heels of a terrific Remington. Not that that's anything new, but finished very well with the Springboard Mile win. Long Range Toddy, and it was a full frontal assault with five horses, and Steve finishes 1-2-4 in there. And then a horse that Steve owns, Clever Serve, wins the She's All In. Vertical Oak last week. She's finishing the year with a flourish. Steve Asmussen joins us. Congratulations on another great year.
Well, thank you very much.
Steve, I lost track of how many horses you sent out on closing night at Remington, but certainly, you know, finishing 1-2-4 in the Springboard, that's a good place to start. And Long Range Toddy for Mr. Horton, the homebred of his.
Yes, a very talented homebred Take Charge Indy colt that is definitely moved forward with racing. And very proud of his effort in the Springboard Mile.
What was your, you know, what was your overall thoughts going in when you, you know, when you send five out of, you know, out of 11, and they had a nice, there was a nice array, Steve, of styles too. You know, there were going to be ones coming from off the pace, and of course, Bankit, the New York bred. You know, talk about what you were looking for, what you were expecting from the quintet.
Well, the Springboard Mile, you know, $400,000 two-year-old race with Derby points attached to it, a race that we had won previously, but it, as recently as last year, we were second in it with Combatant, who did participate in the Derby. You know, we're aware that it's on the calendar. I thought that, as you mentioned, Bankit, a nice win in the Sleepy Hollow going a mile at Belmont, you know, got him off the pace, much better horse. Off of that race, we felt, you know, who the Horton and Winchell partnership, which had Combatant last year, that he was the right horse for the race. And that is how he ended up there. And then the other four, it was their local success at Remington Park that earned them the chance in it. And as you mentioned, Long Range Toddy, a horse that had won the 7/8 prep to the Springboard Mile and settled nicely and was able to win.
Were you surprised that there wasn't a faster pace in here?
I thought that, you know, we Richard Aramia, who rode Long Range Toddy, a very heady rider. It was the way the racetrack was playing on Sunday, and he had him in the right spot.
Absolutely, and basically, you know, set up shop, you know, behind the speeds, and was
he was away very cleanly.
Yeah,
and if they weren't going, he'd have been there. But they had to use a little bit of their horses to you know, get the position that they had. So I thought he was very comfortable down the backside, and looking at coming into the stretch, you could tell he was loaded, and obviously the horse fired home nicely.
Well, and here came Bankett, and I was a little surprised how far back he was. I mean, what did Ricardo say post race?
Well,
were you surprised?
I thought that always, you know, you run a mile at Remington Park is a two turn race. You know, the mile that he came out of at Belmont, a one turn race. A mile at Churchill, a one turn race. And those babies, especially under the lights, they walk up to that grandstand. And all the action is to their right. A lot of it, it's for the first time. And he definitely did not break straight, bounced off the horse beside him. And I thought that, you know, put him behind. But I do love the fact that he's going to come home, and he's a way better horse since he started to settle in his races.
Well, this is a nice result. Tone Broke was fourth as well. He was rallying late, and it's funny because I thought Tobacco Road was as eligible to run well in here off the Clever Trevor win, and he was kind of wide all the way and never. You know, was he a little too close to the pace? I thought that he might come with one run, Steve.
Well, I think off of that race, you know, Tobacco Road's a nice horse. To 7/8 of a mile. I mean, as you mentioned, he had some traffic early. In a 12-horse field, a 2-year-old, that's going to happen. Around the first turn, wasn't as comfortable as it could have been. Kind of put himself in a little position going into the far turn, but flattened out late. I think he's just a horse that had won the Ellis Juvenile at 7/8, and that looks like as far as he needs to run. You had mentioned Tone Broke. I just thought that the mile's too short for him. That's a horse that I'm very excited about when the races get to a mile and an eighth.
And it's interesting. He's a broken vow, so he's got he's got some of that precocious speed, but he's out of a Smart Strike mare, and he's an Ontario bred. I suppose
Queen's Plate.
I suppose, yeah, the Queen's Plate's got to be circled.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen this LNN. Who is this? The ownership.
Lee and Mike Levinson and Don Nelson, and who campaigned looking at Lee.
We've had
very nice horses for him. I thought that we have a very nice crop of 2-year-olds for him. You mentioned Tobacco Road, now Tone Broke, some other nice winners, and Troy Young. So they have some very nice 2-year-olds, and I think that they're going to have a very good 2019.
That's exciting. How about a course of action for the New York bred? Where does Bankett go from here?
I think that both horses, Long Range Toddy and Bankett, deserve a shot in the Smarty Jones at Oaklawn opening weekend. And with the Hortons being the breeder and the owner on Long Range Toddy and being a partner on Bankett, them running them in their home state is always... And the money we're getting to run for at Oaklawn is awfully attractive.
Absolutely. And will they stay at fairgrounds? Where will you put them for now?
They are in transit to Oaklawn as we speak.
Nice.
I gave them yesterday. Sunday was the last day of the meet at Remington Park. And gave them yesterday to recoup. Very happy with how they came out of the race. But they are... on their way to Oaklawn. Get ready for 2019.
I love it. And of course, you know, I've been asking as we get closer to Oaklawn's opening, about 5 weeks away. What's your thoughts, Steve? I don't think I asked you this earlier this year when the news came when Mike Sella announced the expanded schedule. How will it affect you and your approach?
I mean, I think that we'll be ready when they are. I think it'll give us a little chance with the weather. This time of year, we get a few interruptions. We've had the opening weekend not blown out of us a couple of times. I think with the later dates and, you know, the great weather we're always having at the end of the Oakland meet, I think we'll get to stay there and enjoy it this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. We get to, you get to see those, the, you actually get to see the apple blossoms blossom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about the win in the She's All In. Clever serve. And
yeah, that's sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. I clever serve is a filly that had been very good to me with consistent performances. She'd been second or third in several conditioned allowance races this year. And the with the person who went, they were at Oakland, I wanted to not to get beat, but save her condition for more money in the purses at Oakland, and thought maybe, you know, with Adore's speed that she could lope up to third or fourth in the stake, get a check, and still be eligible for her, other than when she got to Oakland, and then Adore hops at the start, and the unthinkable happens. She wins the stake. Can't win her other than, but she wins the stake. So I've... like I said, it's better to be lucky than good.
Well, and she, you know, you bring up a great point. I mean, you claimed her for just 20, and she's just been consistent, just cashing checks, you know, second, third, and you know, she's been competitive. Anything that you noticed per se? She closed into another slow pace in here. That was impressive.
Yeah, when Adore hopped at the start and they threw up 49 and change, I don't think we've ever had Adore not go 47. I was sick to my stomach and just watching her, considering the fact that Clever Serve would be able to win under those circumstances, was very surprising.
I got to ask one question about the one thing that is different. Ramon Vasquez got aboard for the first time, and not to take away from what Ricardo Santana was doing, but clearly Ramon got along with her.
Ramon had a great meet at Remington, and we mentioned Richard winning the Springboard Miles. Remington in the fall, you know, when the weather turns cold, it is a particular track. It is where not to be seems to be more important than where to be.
Hmm. Well, and for Adore, she'll also go on to Oakland?
Yes, she will. Yes, she will.
Actually, I'm not surprised. Well, I guess surprised. I'm a little surprised. Actually, she's going to be six. And is it time to breed her?
I think we got a little out of rhythm with her. Over, she did go to the Keeneland November sale and did not meet her reserve.
Okay.
She is a horse that we discussed that, you know, obviously not as appealing a pedigree as the market wants right now. She's still a very useful racehorse, and we discussed it and think she can make more money running than they value her as a broodmare at, and it was proven at the Keeneland November sale, which she went through the ring in.
That's interesting, and the fact that you moved her over to grass, you know, she was out of an Empire Maker mare, and she's by Big Brown, and it sure feels like those two grass races suited her.
Right. She we had run her once on the grass as a 3-year-old in the Edgewood at Churchill, and with no success. But you know, that was when she was three, a different course. Opportunity. We put her back on the grass her 5-year-old year, and she wins two in a row. So that's a nice option for her. But she's very versatile, nice filly. I thought it spoke really well of her to hop at the start, no pace whatsoever. She still runs third in 100,000. So even when it doesn't go well, she's a check casher.
But there you go.
She's 9 wins from 20 starts. Horses like that are hard to come by.
Well, we'll shift gears a little bit, and before we talk about what's coming up at Fairgrounds this Saturday, an unbelievable card, a quick hit on Vertical Oak from last week in New York, and she certainly is finishing the year, you know, kind of on a positive, on back on an upswing.
Very much so. I'm very proud of Vertical Oak. She's a lovely filly. Kirk and Judy Robeson sit. I think we've figured out what not to do with her, which has allowed her to have more consistency and more success. I think she's in a great rhythm right now. Her win at Churchill in the fall meet was beautiful. I'd planned on waiting until Oakland to run her, but she came out of it in such good shape. We used the Garland of Roses in between, and she rewarded us with another huge effort.
Where, what, you know, what venue, what direction does she come for the winter?
She goes to Oakland, and there's a nice sprint stake opening week, and she'll be awfully tough.
Very nice. There you go. I got to ask you about one maiden starter, because I had Kieran McLaughlin yesterday, Steve, and American Mandate ran him, you know, to a head bob, and won't be American Mandate will not be a maiden probably after his next start.
I've said that three races in a row. today I got him. And he's a very nice horse for Susie Orr that run another solid race. And if you have no control over who you're in with, and it takes a good horse to beat him, you know, and that's just. But he'll try again. I mean, he's a very nice horse.
Well, 85 buyer for the two of them the other day, and talked to Kieran. Kieran's very excited about Heichel, so you won't be you're in good company there. And actually, we should also just mention, I know it's just a state bred, but the London House ran well as well the other day.
Yeah, he swims. He didn't run well. He swam well. I mean, the track was underwater.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. Well, Steve, before we talk about what's ahead, a couple of thoughts about the year, more or less. And, of course, it started with Gunrunner. And, you know, the number of horses bubbled to the surface for you. Talk about your 2018, which is, on paper, in terms of earnings, your best year yet.
Well, amazing. As you mentioned, you know, Gunrunner got us off with a $7 million kickstart in the Pegasus. And we're blessed with opportunity. We have some extremely talented horses for the best owners in the game. So hopefully we'll just continue to have some success. We should. I've always said I'm a lot more surprised by the ones that get beat than the ones that win.
Well, part of it is when you've got the kind of horsepower that you know that you have access to. And one win we should absolutely include. You had three Grade One wins between the Pegasus, the Met performance by B Jersey, which was memorable, and of course Midnight Bizou, was put up, but was very much a deserving Cotillion winner as well. Steve, mentioning B Jersey's win and Midnight Bizou from some of the highlights after Pegasus.
Well, I'm just very proud of the performances that put in, but as you mentioned, with horses of the quality of B Jersey and Midnight Bizou, you're going to have, we're just, as I mentioned, pleased to have that kind of opportunity. Midnight Bizou is still in training. She's a picture of health and very much looking forward to her 2019 campaign.
Couple of highlights from Saturday. Looking forward to Fairgrounds. This is some card they put together, Steve. And good to see Switzerland back in the entries. He's in the Bonaparte. You've got a bunch of maidens to consider and more. You've got in the Sugar Bowl, Cajun Firecracker, one of our personal favorites. Snapper Sinclair is in the Tenacious. Some thoughts about some of the potential major players on Saturday.
As I think it's a very good card Saturday. Some quality horses. We have, you know, Maiden that we're high on in Gunnet, running his second time out, that we think good things are in his future. As you mentioned, Snapper Sinclair, Switzerland, Philly, Adventurous Lady, who's had success, you know, Cajun Firecracker. We have some very live chances on Saturday and expect to have good results.
Well, and for those that haven't had a chance to look yet, you're going to be impressed. One of our favorite owners also is somebody that is a major player in the Arkansas racing establishment, the Lieblongs, Alex and Joanne. What do we know about Strong Arm, the firster, in the fifth on Saturday?
You know, two very attractive colts, first-time starters that will definitely show up at Oaklawn.
Well, Benny is the. Are they both Strong Arm and Benny going to run in that race? Benny's
Noble,
AE.
Right. It's Noble Gambler and Strong Arm that are the lead long two. And separate, it's a split race there in separate halves.
Okay. Strong Arm is in the fifth, and Benny's on the AE. That's a firster, that's a homebred of Gary and Mary West's.
Right.
Will he run if you get in, or will you wait?
Yes,
for something?
Of course.
Excellent. Nice. Well, Steve, you seem poised once again to going into 2019, finishing the year strong as well. Best wishes to everybody, to the family, and Julie, and the boys, and best wishes for a tremendous 2019.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Steve, thanks. Steve Asmussen, everybody. And, I mean, it can go on for another half hour because there's a bunch of other maidens. If you're listening carefully, the horse in the fourth, Gunnet, with good reason. This is just yet another tap it. And Gunnet made the debut start in at Churchill, and there was a little bit of a buzz. He was facing a number of more experienced horses. In fact, I think he was the only. I think, if I remember, he was the only firster. And that was the race that King Ford won, and Harvey Wallbanger was second. And then Harvey Wallbanger came back later in the month, later in November, and broke his maiden. So it might be a productive race, looking at the PPs. October 28th, leading up to Breeders' Cup. So I would take a look and put a little. I just put a little asterisk, and this is should mention too. This is the latest product from Miss Bessie Lou. So you've got. And got a fairly fancy pedigree in here, the Medaglia d'Oro mare. This was her first foal. And I'm sure that there's plenty expected here from Gunnet. And it sounds like Steve, like you said, disappointed by the, or surprised, more surprised by the losses than the wins. But Mandy Pope with Gunnet. Back after this, we've got an interesting visit. Boone McKenna is going to join us from California and talk about what he's doing on the ranch with veterans and with therapy horses. Boone McKenna joins us next.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues Thursday through Sunday at Los Alamitos Racecourse with more stakes action coming up on December 15th and 16th. First post is 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. The weekend action will feature the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday, December 15th and the King Glorious on Sunday, December 16th. All of the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Racing fans, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick Fours continues. The wager has been well received and the pools figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick Six wager. And when the sun goes down, the lights turn on at Los Alamitos with nighttime quarter horse and thoroughbred racing action every Friday through Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Great racing is in store at Los Alamitos Racecourse through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Let's go! For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.